Congress has made clear in at least two laws that are already on the books that it thinks military members should be able to vote in state, local, and federal elections no matter where in the world they are. But a large group of the House of Representatives is still worried that's not the case. They want the Government Accountability Office to take another look at the Federal Voting Assistance Program. That's the office in the Pentagon that facilitates overseas voting programs. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writing about it in this week's edition of Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook. Has there been a chain of events that's caused members of Congress to be wary about this? Or is this just kind of an ongoing concern that they're coming back to after a while?
Yeah, more the latter, I think. So most of the numbers they cite are based on the 2008 presidential cycle, and obviously a lot has happened since then. But nonetheless, I think this is definitely a big ongoing problem. And the numbers we talk about in the notebook this week kind of give you some sense of the scale of it. Something like a third of the military voters back in that 2008 presidential election cycle were not able to have their votes counted. 22% of voters. And by the way, this is not just military voters. The program covers anybody living overseas, including State Department folks, or even just average private citizens, expatriates who happen to be living outside the country. But anyway, 22% of all those voters never even got the ballots that they requested. They never even had a chance to fill them out and send them back. And yes, you can say 2008 was a long time ago, but Congress passed a law in 2009 that was supposed to fix some of this, in part by requiring local elections officials to mail out absentee ballots at least 45 days before an election. But that did not fix the problems, as I alluded to a second ago. We've seen some more recent analyses that say that even in the 2012 election, there were more than a quarter of a million military and overseas voters who wanted to cast their ballots, but their votes were never actually counted. And for most of those, it was because the ballots got back to their hometown elections offices after the deadlines that those local officials set, which really vary quite a lot, which is one of the problems. And because of what some research from Texas State University calls signature issues is the other issue. Different states have different requirements for what they want on their absentee ballots in terms of that signature. There's no federal standard, and along with the mailing deadlines, which again vary a lot, the fact that snail mail takes a really, really long time to get from Nebraska to Bahrain, it's just really not clear what you need to do from an overseas voter's perspective, and when, if you plan on voting overseas, when you need to do what you need to do. So a lot of the recommendations that have come forward since then have relied, as you would expect, heavily on either improving the mail process or getting rid of it entirely by moving things online.
It strikes me that this is a problem that's crying out for some kind of uniformity and some kind of technology solution, both of which I can think off the top of my head of one or two reasons for each why it wouldn't either be appropriate or likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the main concern about moving things online is the longstanding concern about cybersecurity, and mm-hmm. that's been a concern even before the modern day discussion about cybersecurity has really come into fruition. Everyone's always been very hesitant about allowing online voting because it's such a sacred right. But one of the things that the Presidential Commission on Election Administration pointed out in its 2013 and in that panel was set up in 2013 by the president after the impetus for that was basically just long lines at domestic polling places. But one of the conclusions they came to was about overseas and military voters. And they found that, look, we're probably not ready for prime time when it comes to online voting because of some of the cybersecurity concerns. But you're basically choosing here between having military voters submit their votes in some kind of quasi-insecure way that we're not quite sure about, or having their ballots not get counted at all, which is what's happening to far too many of those. Some other issues around this are just that it just takes a very long time for mail to make its way through the military postal system, and there have been some other proposals to try and fix that. One of the main issues there is that if a military member moves from one unit on one side of the world to another on the other side of the world, the piece of mail actually has to get to that first unit before it can get forwarded to the second unit where that military member has moved to. So that's another 2 or 3 weeks in addition to the 2 weeks it takes to get from the U.S. to the first place around the world. So it just takes a very long time for pieces of paper to move their way across the globe, despite all the work that the military postal system and USPS have done to try and make this as efficient as possible.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu going inside the reporter's notebook this week. The second item in the notebook is kind of a very big disagreement about how to assess personnel cuts, particularly at the Air Force. Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James testifying that she's succeeded in meeting Ashton Carter's proclamation from 2013 to cut 20% out of headquarters. Senator John McCain, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, doesn't quite see it that way.
Yeah, this has been a big brag on the Air Force's part, actually, over the past couple of years. So the background on this is that Ashton Carter, back when he was Deputy Defense Secretary, issued a memo telling all DOD components, not just the military services, but all the defense agencies, too, to cut their headquarters spending. Not exactly defined what headquarters is, but in any case, cut their headquarters by 20% over the course of 5 years. The Air Force has been proud of the fact in testimony and in public speeches that they were going to do it in just 1 year, and they have testified to that they have actually achieved that. Under some questioning in a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing a couple weeks ago, the Air Force Secretary said, well, that actually hasn't meant that 20% of our staff has cut back, but we think that 20% of our funding has cut back. In a letter that Senator John McCain, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, sent to Deborah Lee James, the Air Force Secretary, last week, he points out that there's actually no evidence that you've actually cut your funding by 20%, but there's definitely no evidence that you've cut your staff by anything close to 20%, which was one of the objectives Carter outlined in that memo. He didn't say you had to do it, but he said that was definitely one of the objectives. At least cut your funding by 20%, but try to also cut your headcount by 20%. McCain says that the Air Force's response to that seems to have been to basically just shift its organizational chart around, in part by creating a new two-star command to handle its mission and base support functions, and moving ISR activities from headquarters Air Force to a new two-star command under Air Combat Command, which if that's actually what happened, and we don't know all the details yet, because I think the Air Force is still working through all the personnel actions that are going to finally facilitate all this, that new base and installation mission support command, for example, is just now standing up. It just reached initial operating capability in the past couple months, so a lot of this still has to shake out. But McCain's point is, it really doesn't look like what you're doing is actually cutting either funding or personnel. You're just moving positions from headquarters down to lower levels. And his evidence, one of his main pieces of evidence for that, is that the committee, neither the House nor the Senate Armed Services Committee, has gotten any reprogramming requests from the Air Force that say, look, here's all the money that we saved from our headquarters reductions. We want to put this money elsewhere. That has not happened.
Senator McCain, not happy, calls this a shell game. And you can read more about that inside the reporter's notebook on federalnewsradio.com right now. One item I want to talk about, even though we just have a minute or so left, Jared. You reported a short time ago that the clean opinion of the Marine Corps 2013 partial financial audit's been withdrawn by the Inspector General at the Department of Defense, and now the implication may be on more of the agency than just the Marine Corps.
Yeah, we got very little detail on this when this was first announced from the DODIG, but as you said, it's probably not just about the Marine Corps. I'm going to probably get out of my depth here talking about financial management, which is an area that I'm not trained on in detail. But basically, the issue here is what's called suspense accounts within the Treasury Department. These are accounts that basically hold transactions, whether it's money coming in or money going out, where you can't immediately assign which DOD component or agency is responsible for the transaction. They're supposed to be short-term holding grounds that last for no more than 60 days for any individual transaction. What was uncovered by the independent auditor that was doing the Marine Corps audit was that some of these transactions, and we don't know how much in terms of dollar value, had been in these sort of phantom accounts for a period of years, which called into question the statement of budgetary activity, which is the partial audit that you referred to, and that's the fundamental reason why the DOD IG withdrew its first ever clean opinion on a DOD audit. The additional details that the IG's office released to us this week is that they really think this is not a Marine Corps problem. It's a problem that impacts all of the Defense Department because it really implicates the way the Defense Finance and Accounting Service manages those suspense accounts for all of the military services. So the questions that still need to be answered, really, the main one really is how large these accounts, these suspense accounts are, how much money has been moving through them and stayed in them for that period that's longer than 60 days. Because if there's a large amount of money in there, and they've stayed in there for a period of years, it completely invalidates, in theory, the statement of budgetary activity that the Marine Corps just submitted, which is basically an accounting of the money in and the money out for a single year, which in turn was supposed to be a stopgap measure that allowed DOD to reach its 2014 audit, which it's not done yet, which in turn was supposed to be another stopgap measure that allowed it to get to its 2017 audit. So I think a lot of this is really in question.
Yeah, and you're right that since this isn't just a Marine Corps problem, since it's a DFAS issue, the dollar value issue here is what is most likely to come under scrutiny next, it sounds like.
Yeah, the dollar value, I think, is really important. If it's a material amount, and again, I'm getting out of my depth here in terms of characterizing the amount of money that would raise concerns on the part of independent auditors or the IG's office. If it's a few dollars here and a few dollars there, they probably don't care that much. If there's a few stray transactions in there that nobody actually noticed or or took care of. But if the DOD IG pulled back its initial audit, that's a clear signal to me, and I think many other people that I've talked to, that they clearly believe it's a material amount of money that's going to influence the opinion, or that would have influenced the opinion that they first issued, and it's probably going to impact the rest of the military services, which is a big deal. Again, this is the first clean opinion, even on a partial financial statement, that had ever been issued to any component of the Defense Department, which is, again, the last piece of the government and never get a clean financial audit. The Marine Corps was supposed to lead the way for the rest of the military services here. So in one sense, I guess it's good that this issue is being raised and discovered early and being worked through. We're just going to have to see how much work it takes to uncover and untangle all these issues in these suspense accounts. Hopefully it's not much, but if it's a large amount of money in terms of dollar value, it's going to set back the process significantly, I think.
Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu going inside the DOD reporter's notebook. Thank you as always, my friend.
Thank you.